Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This is Vayera Part 2. It's a two-part episode, and this podcast is sponsored by Robert Hammer in memory of his beloved late wife, Barbara Hammer. This podcast is Vayera with Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy. Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy is a member of the Pardes faculty, and she also serves as the director of admissions for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy.
In the previous episode, I examined the tension between the two final tests of Abraham, with Stone as he garners the courage to challenge God for God's apparently unethical position. Chalilacha, hashofet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat. God forbid that the... How far be it from you, God, to that the judge of the entire universe should not do justice? And the relationship between that and Abraham's powerful Hineni, here I am when called to sacrifice his son. We suggested in the previous episode that these two events could be seen as a deliberate juxtaposition of the two spiritual paradigms, autonomy and partnership with God, and humility, fear, and submission. The fact that commentators disagreed as to which posture was primary is not so surprising. Finding a balance is a personal quest for every Jew, but each posture is authentic and needs its place. In this episode, I'd like to explore the approach of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, which is to the same question that I find particularly inspiring. According to Rabbi Heschel, the incidents should be seen as part of a growing and developing relationship rather than in tension with each other. For Heschel, Abraham was the first great prophet. As a prophet, he understood God and God's law as a demand for ethos, ethical behavior embodied in the notions of tzedakah u'mishpat, justice and righteousness. As Isaiah says, Zion shall be redeemed by justice and those in her who repent by righteousness. Abraham has been chosen because he would teach others to do tzedakah u'mishpat, justice and righteousness. But the substance of those words are difficult to delineate for us, as well as for Abraham. As Heschel states, immutable justice raises justice to a position of supremacy, denying to any other principle the power to temper it, regarding it as an absolute. The world exists for the sake of maintaining justice rather than justice for the sake of maintaining the world. Carried to its extreme, the principle sets up a false dichotomy of the world and justice, betraying the truth that the survival of the world is itself a requirement of justice. It may be because of this very challenge that God invites Abraham into his confidence. Had God neglected to do so, Abraham would never have understood fully why God obliterated Sodom and Amorah. That is to say, God knew that Sodom should be destroyed, but God conferred with Abraham for Abraham's benefit, so that Abraham could learn. As my teacher, Ravain Kimmelman, has written, Abraham's opening argument is based in justice, not mercy. For God to be worthy of the mantle of universal justice, it's incumbent on him to adopt the fundamental claim of justice, to distinguish between innocent and guilty. That's the claim that Abraham makes. But justice demands that all get their just deserts, not the sparing of the guilty by virtue of the innocent in their midst. So when Abraham says, won't you spare the entire city on behalf of the 50 if there are 50 righteous? It appears that he's confronting God as a way of avoiding a perversion of justice, but it turns out to be a surreptitious request for clemency. In actuality, were the guilty to be spared because of the innocent, there'd be equally no distinction between them, making Abraham's proposal subject to the same charge leveled against God. In this case, the argument is that God should forgive or at least suspend punishment to the entire city. That is a demand for mercy. God must have known that neither 50, not even 10 righteous people would be found in the city. But it was important for Abraham to know as well. Only through his understanding could he teach his posterity what a real community of justice entails. And so through his negotiations with God, Abraham comes to know and experience the depth of God's sense of justice, a justice that ironically, at its very core, includes a major component of mercy. Abraham's left with no doubt that God has done all God possibly could to save the city. It's been destroyed because of its total wickedness. And those who were had even a little bit of merit were redeemed. Through the process, Abraham encountered not only God's sense of ethos, deep ethics, but also pathos, the love that Hashem has for his creations. For Heschel, it's not this idea he calls pathos, by which he means love, relationship, intimacy, and feeling, is central to the prophetic experience of God. In Heschel's words, prophecy consists in the inspired communication of divine attitudes to the prophetic consciousness. The divine pathos is the ground tone to all these attitudes. To the prophet, God does not reveal himself in abstract absoluteness, but in a personal and intimate relationship to the world. He does not simply command and expect obedience. He is also moved and affected by what happens in the world and reacts accordingly. Events and human actions arouse in him joy or sorrow, pleasure or wrath. The notion that God can be intimately affected, that he possesses not merely intelligence, but also pathos, basically defines the prophetic consciousness of God. Through Abraham's encounter with God around Sodom, Abraham learns deeply how to understand the great deal about God's ethos, but also about God's pathos. According to Heschel, what Abraham experiences is that man is not only an image of God, he's a perpetual concern of God. The idea of pathos adds a new dimension to human existence. Whatever man does affects not only his own life, but also the life of God insofar as it is directed to man. The import of man raises him beyond the level of mere creature. He is a consort, a partner, a factor in the life of God. So Abraham experiences himself as a consort, a partner, and a factor in the life of God, but he also experiences the way the people of Sodom and Amorah, and really every being in the world, is a concern in the life of God. This is what Abraham learned by arguing with God in defense of Sodom. So once Abraham develops this intimacy with God, the Akedah can only be experienced in a totally different light than the way we're used to perceiving it. And I quote, "What Abraham and the prophets encountered was not a noumen, but the fullness of God's care. The moral law may be obscured, but never suspended. The very act of addressing Abraham was experienced as care. It was because of the experience of God's responding to him in his pleas for Sodom that Abraham did not question the command to sacrifice his only son. And it was the certainty of God's love and mercy that enabled the prophets to accept his anger." Now I personally saw a number of modern scholars explaining Abraham's action as a sort of deep-seated belief that God would not ultimately demand Abraham the Isaac sacrifice. That is to say, Abraham went through with it, or went through a set of actions, because he had no intention of sacrificing Isaac. He knew God would relent. I personally think this undermines the text, and I don't think that that's what Heschel's suggesting. What I think Heschel is suggesting is that although Abraham does not know that God will ultimately save Isaac, he experiences so much love and intimacy from God that he trusts God completely, even in the unknown. Heschel focuses on a verse from Kabbalat Shabbat, from Psalms 97, which we're familiar with from Kabbalat Shabbat. It goes like this: Anan v'rafel svivav, tzedek u'mishpat mechon kiso. Clouds and thick darkness are around him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. Abraham knows that righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. meaning that's the basis of what God is all about, even though he can't understand it with clarity. He knows that God is all about righteous and justiceness. It's surrounded by clouds and thick darkness all around him, but he knows that behind all of that confusion is pure righteousness and justice. And therefore, Abraham has the confidence to follow God wherever God leads him without any fear. In sum, unlike the philosophers we encountered in the previous segment, Heschel does not experience the final two tests as expression of contrary and dialectical, but authentic spiritual postures of autonomy and submission. On the contrary, in defending Sdom, Avraham experiences not only the deep ethos of God, but also God's pathos, God's unending commitment, his connection and attachment to God's creatures. And it's that love and understanding of ethos and pathos, which Abraham understands is so core to what God is, that's what guides Abraham through the trial of the Akedah. Abraham is profoundly aware of God's love for Sdom, and he knows that it also extends to Isaac, to Sarah, and to himself as well. He knows that he can't possibly understand all of God's ways. They're surrounded by clouds and thick darkness, but he trusts God completely. I want to close with a little thought. Abraham seems to have passed his test, but he doesn't seem to have completed either of his missions. Certainly, as Professor Kimmelman suggests, if he were working on a contingency fee basis, he wouldn't be able to claim either saving Sdom or sacrificing Isaac, try as he might have to do so. What are we to make of this? First of all, I want to say that I think this is a great topic for your Shabbat table. It could have a lot to say about how we approach life, the way we emphasize process over result. But I think there are probably a lot of other answers as well. I want to just connect it to Heschel's Hasidic notion, the idea that we are the continuation of our forefathers. The work is deliberately left undone so that we can continue it. In Hartman's mind, that means to continue to protest injustice when we see it, wherever we see it, and from whomever we see it. For the Esh Kodesh, the Piesnicherov, who was writing in the Warsaw Ghetto in its closing days under Nazi rule, it meant to be prepared to sacrifice even our own lives and to give them with love when we were called upon to do so. I'm inspired by Hartman's call for protest. Obviously, the Esh Kodesh was in a terrible point in history that we would never want to repeat. But we do have lesser moments of submission, I believe. Perhaps they're traditions that we don't fully understand, but we bow to them. And more extremely, sometimes we find ourselves enduring extreme loss that we cannot possibly understand. We certainly don't set out for them actively, but when they happen to us, my prayer is that we should find the strength to experience them in the context of numinosity, pathos, love, and relationship that Abraham was able to experience them. May our attempts to experience them as such be considered as a merit for us. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Mishamer Kassoy. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.